What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Taking your phone calls, 617-779-7937. We will go on the clock, as we do every Thursday, at high noon. We'll give you 60 seconds each, everything you need to know about the Patriots and the Vikings preseason game number two. But joining us right now, as he does every Thursday at 11:30, you heard the music there, Rob Bradford, WEEI and Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. He's brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on. At McFarlaneEnergy.com. Bradfo, what's up?
Let me tell you, McFarlane to you both, and I don't know if you heard, but Scott McFarlane, our good friend Scott McFarlane, came on this radio station and has proclaimed that he will get a Baseball Isn't Boring tattoo when the Red Sox win the World Series.
Wow, so him and Cora.
Are you starting a cult, Bradford?
I am. Okay. I'm starting a cult. Good That's Lord. Exactly what it is.
These poor guys are getting guilted into tattoo bets.
Now, Keith has a little temporary tattoo on today that noticed. I was like, did Keith get some new ink over there?
No. It's
like,
My kids go hog wild for these fake tattoos. You should see them head to toe. My daughter looks like Machine Gun Kelly. I'm like, what are you doing? take those off. Like, they stay on for days.
It's a gateway drug.
It is.
I'm just going to tell you. It's a gateway drug.
So do I have the full list? It's Cora. It's Scott McFarlane. Who is anybody else getting
a lot? Pete Fatsy.
Mike McFarlane.
Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease, if he wins it for San Diego.
Wow. So there's a lot of balls in the air for different awards.
We're a national brand.
This is actually the smartest thing you can do is find like the eight contending teams, get at least one guy from each team to make this bet, and then you're pretty much guaranteed someone's doing it. There's a free idea.
I think I'm going through the list in my head. Luke Weaver, I think, maybe has agreed to it with the Yankees.
Maybe.
So I got some work to do. There's 40 games left, but I think I can do it. I know that the guys in San Diego, when the show out there, Ben and Woods, when they found out about it, they tried getting Mike Schilt to do it. They're like, oh, that's a great idea. We're going to have Mike Schilt, who comes on our show, get a Ben and Woods tattoo. Mike Schilt wasn't going to do that.
No, he's not going to do that.
Baseball isn't boring or nothing.
I like you guys have a great logo. You got like the seams of the baseball. I could see a lot of guys, especially the guys that have a million tattoos. What's another one?
Should we start doing this?
Patriots keep tattoos?
Patriots Monday and Friday.
You think Hunter Henry will do it?
Yeah. Can you ask Hunter Henry if he'll get a Baseball Isn't Boring tattoo?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. We'll
put that in there.
Yeah, he's going to show up on a Patriots Monday first. But yeah, we can do that. So Bradfo, we were talking about the Red Sox and their offense yesterday. I go, hey, I think this offense is legit. I think it's not going to disappear in October against good pitching. And then they come out last night and they do nothing. Cora's begging for a balk to get a run home in the middle of the game. So how much can we count on the offense? Because I hear this often. The runs will come in bunches, just like they did on this road trip. I think they outscored their opponents on the road trip, but most of the runs were clustered 14 in one game. How legitimate do you think the offense is?
I think it's legitimate, but the problem is that you've had some downturns against the type of pitchers you're going to face in the postseason. And I mean, last night was a perfect example of that. Yeah, you can put up runs against whoever. I mean, the mediocre guys, but when the rubber meets the road and you have to go up against those Philly starters or Hunter Brown or someone like that, are you going to be able to function? And they have at times, but I think that's sort of the shot across their bow a little bit. What is that going to look like? I'll tell you another concern too that no one really talks about because everyone obsesses how good they are at home. I think they have one series win against a team over 500 on the road. And, like, that's something that you got to fix. I mean, they don't have a whole lot of opportunities. Their schedule, I think it's, as our good friend Gordo points out, the seventh easiest schedule going forward. But still, like, you have to, you go to Toronto at the end of September, it would behoove you to take that series. It would behoove you to take the series against the Yankees coming up at Yankee Stadium. So there's still some boxes to check off here with 40 games to go.
you know, the last time out for Crochet, Bayo, and Giolito, all down starts. Let's begin though with Crochet. Mm. His hit is the most innings he's ever pitched at the major league level this year. Do you look at the last one as you know, he was due for a bad game, or is there more to it?
Well, he had a mediocre one, and then he had a couple really good ones, and then he has this one. So I think you just got to ride this out. But I think the problem is that every single time there isn't a dominant outing or a really, really good outing, this conversation is going to come up. And it is what it is, man. Like, this is your lot in life. When you haven't pitched an entire year as a full-time starter, then people are going to say, well, what's it going to look like in August and September? And we aren't even talking about October. I mean, I always go back to a couple of years ago. Zach Gallen ended up with 240 innings. I mean, that's a lot. There's a lot of stuff that you had to do in October. And so I think that it's a fair conversation to have. Do I think he's going to take a downturn? No, I don't. That's just a hunch. But I think it's a fair conversation to have because he's never been in this world before. And here's the thing, too, is that if you are close and these are high leveraged innings, that's a whole nother thing. So, yeah, I think it's something to keep an eye on. But right now, I'm not overly concerned about what you're going to see in Garrett Crochet in August and certainly early September.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, I think Crochet will be fine. I'm not really worried about him. The other two guys, though, that have been pretty nails all season, I'm not as confident in. So one of the reasons why we talked so much about that number two starter was to sort of push Bayo and Giolito down a spot. I don't know if you compare it at all to like Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford from a year ago, where those guys were nasty for a while and then ultimately kind of regained their normal form. How do you feel and how do you think the team feels about relying on Bayo, Giolito?
I think all of them are different. I don't think you can compare him to Houck because Houck, that was the first go-round in terms of being that guy. Giolito's been that guy. Giolito's been through seasons now. Whether or not you think he's going to be consistent and have that kind of consistent run he had before the last start, you know, okay, let's have that debate. You know, the thing with Giolito is that he has these bad ones and then goes on a run of good ones. But it's weird, guys, because I think with Bayo and Giolito, even when they were going good, and I've said this before up until their last starts, since the end of June, there had been no other team with three starters with a 2.70 ERA or better in the entire major leagues. But even when they were going that run, there was this narrative of sort of waiting, like, are they good enough? Are they good enough? Are they good enough? You really need Joe Ryan, and you did need that other guy. But I don't know if it's because of Giolito and Bayo. And I just think that they have that cloud hanging over themselves with they haven't proven, they don't have the benefit of the doubt of the fan base. So that's why these starts coming up are important to get that benefit of the doubt back. And by the way, Joe Ryan, three starts since the trade deadline, really, really good. Maybe you can pivot away from the Rafael Devers updates and do the Joe Ryan updates.
Oh, okay. The Joe Ryan update.
I don't mind that.
Okay, look, he's telling people to get tattoos. He's programming the radio show.
Let's go. Sandy Alcantara, not so good, by the way.
No, hopefully that continues tomorrow.
Yeah, he should switch his name back to Alcantara. Which is what he should do. So I'm curious, Bradfo, you cover, as you said, all of baseball. We're very parochial here. We pay attention to what the Red Sox are doing and not much else. And, you know, I've noticed, and I think a lot of people have noticed, a bunch of blow-ups on the Red Sox this year. People yelling at base coaches, tip pitches, whatever else could be going on. Cora was asked about this yesterday on WEEI Afternoons. Why do teams seem so upset with the Red Sox specifically this year and some of their antics, actions, however you want to put that?
Yeah, I think that baseball is something where, you know, it's like a clubhouse. The clubhouse becomes like the narrative of a clubhouse. It becomes like phone tag or whatever you want to call it. They talk among themselves. People talk in baseball among themselves. They get narratives going. And when you heard the Skubal thing the other day, you know, he mentioned the Red Sox, but I think he mentioned the Yankees too. I think this is how it works. And, you know, an example of this was Hector Neris, the guy for the Astros who got into it with Kyle Hudson, right? The thing that people didn't realize about that was Neris was with the Angels when all that Tyler Anderson stuff, and they had that kerfuffle, which is the only way to phrase it, the kerfuffle pregame with the Angels. So it was already in his head. They had already like had that conversation. That goes to, you know, the Astros, and that goes to another team. Listen, I mean, what they're doing is what they're doing. And I said this before, you know, whether it's the base coaches or whether it's getting the start or looking the grips at second base, this is how baseball is. And I think Alex Cora said it yesterday, where it, unfortunately for him, it amps up because of what he did before. But in terms of stealing signs and all that, that is what it is. That's baseball. And the staying in the coaching box, I don't even know why they have coaching boxes anymore. No one stays in the coaching boxes anymore. But the Red Sox clearly, whether you want to say they're good at it or they just do it, this is part of the deal, man. Whether it's on the iPads or whether it's having some guy at second or whether it's having a base coach move, whatever it is. But I will say this, it's all legal. Like, it is all legal, but that's why people get upset, though. I mean, people can get upset, but it's legal.
Abraham Toro has really cooled off over the last couple of months. Do you think we see Christian Campbell back up and playing first base sooner rather than later?
I think they'll be really hesitant. Every time Campbell's name comes up, they seem really hesitant, like, say, hey, listen, you know, we got to wait. I don't think as a first baseman he's there yet. He still has some work to do. He's been better offensively, certainly. But, I mean, make no mistake about it. I mean, they screwed up in how long it took to send that guy down. And I think because of it, you had to sort of build yourself. It took a while to build him back up. You're starting to build the guy back up. This is the long haul for Christian Campbell. This isn't necessarily like, hey, Yoán Moncada, come in and save our season as doing this in September. Nah, this is something different. And I don't think that right now he's at that place. And right now, you're right about Toro. He's hit the Dom Smith tipping point a little bit.
Yeah.
but I do think that he has shown just enough that it said, okay, well, we can ride this out for a little while longer.
Let me ask you about another potential call-up. You were on this show last week or the week prior even, talking about Peyton Tolley and David Sandlin and some of these names. What about Harrison? Is he under consideration to get called up, perhaps in place of the guy we saw last night, Walker Buehler?
I don't think so yet. They give Buehler a lot of rope here, and they'll say at like game like last night, oh well, it was good except for this. It was good except for this. Good except for this. The problem is that he does have some benefit of the doubt. He has that built-in benefit of the doubt. Now you get into September when the games mean the most. Then it becomes a different conversation. I will say this about Kyle Harrison. Like, I went and watched him. I saw him pitch in Worcester, and then I saw the results from him, I think it was yesterday. Like, he's an interesting guy. He is this fastball that really jumps at the end. Like, it's only 93, 94, 95, but he's become a really, really interesting guy. So to answer your question, I don't think there's anything, like, imminent about moving Buehler out, having Harrison put back in, but there's a lot of things that are happening right now and will happen or not happen in the next 2 weeks that will change at the end of September. And I use the Eovaldi example in 2018. Remember that, guys. He comes in, he's traded for, he has two outings where he doesn't give up a run, and then he's horrific for about a month. And everyone's like, he's not going to make the postseason roster. And then by the end, September rolls around. Okay, you can make the postseason roster. Okay, you can be a legend. Okay, you can get a huge contract. Things change in a hurry or a lot in the next month and a half.
I got a lineup question for you. And I know, yeah, you're going to like this. Well, teams obviously look at their lineups differently. I mean, you see Shohei Ohtani leads off for the Dodgers, one of the best home run hitters, one of the best pure hitters in all of baseball. He's a leadoff hitter now, maybe not a prototypical leadoff hitter. Jaron Duran was an elite leadoff hitter a year ago, hasn't been as good this year, so they move him down to three. Roman Anthony has been the leadoff hitter now for a while. Do you expect that to sort of continue? Anthony one, Duran three, and then does Roman Anthony like long-term project as a leadoff guy?
You know what jumped to mind when you were talking? What was it, Joe Mazzulla saying there's, or someone said there's no, oh no, it was Rick Pitino said there's no longer point guards in basketball. Yeah. Point guards no longer exist.
Right.
And I feel like that's sort of along the lines of leadoff hitters where he's like, you have to be fast and you have to be this guy or whatever it is. Hey, it's a results business. It has been a results business. Roman Anthony's numbers in the leadoff spot are crazy good. Jaren Duran's numbers in the number three spot are crazy good. And in this day and age of baseball, what's happening, like we talk about, oh, well, the best hitter is the number three hitter. No. The best hitter usually, honestly, two years ago, it was the number two hitter.
Right.
Right now, it's trending to the number one hitter. It's like, it's weird how that's happening. We've seen it with Ohtani. So that's how it is. The number three hitter is no longer that guy. Certainly the number four guy is no longer that guy. So,
but what's the logic for that? Because I get number two. I get. That's been going around for years. But leadoff hitter, I feel like you're guaranteeing his first at bat with nobody on base. I feel like, especially for a power guy.
It's just as simple as getting him more at bats over the course of a year, right?
But I want him up with more guys on.
Yeah.
I know, but you hit the nail on the head. I think it's just getting him up one more time.
All right.
That's it. Because ultimately what they'll say is that, well, you only have to do it without guys on base one time, right? And then you're probably going to have somebody on base and you get the guy the extra at bat.
But I'd be curious, and this is, I mean, I'm sure Breslow and some of his computers know the answer to this, but if everybody played every game, how many more at bats does the leadoff hitter get than the number two hitter? Right, especially if the number one hitter gets on base at a decent clip, I'm feeling like the number two hitter is getting up all the time too. So I don't know.
I like that, though. Yeah. I'm going to put the baseballs and boring analytics department on that.
Get them on the case.
Yeah. Get the hamsters.
If I get that to you, will you get a tattoo?
Hell yeah.
I knew he was going to ask one of them before we got out here. I was happy it was you.
You make the fake tattoos, my daughter will be covered in them head to toe. So.
He is Rob Bradford. Joins us every Thursday at 11:30. You can check him out on the Odyssey app, Baseball Isn't Boring, the podcast. Get your tattoos at your local tattoo parlor. And Bradford, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks
so much. We'll talk to you Tuesday, Bradford. You're in Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. Right.
In person, it's going to be a great time, and it's going to be a great couple days, obviously. You guys do such a great job. So appreciate everything, guys. I'll talk to you then.
Yeah, so good point, Keith. It's going to be Tuesday at 10:30 with Bradford next week, live from Fenway Park.
Very good.
For the Jimmy Fund Telethon. So thanks to Brad Foe for switching up his schedule and doing that for us next week. 617-779-7937. We'll get back to your feedback. We also saw, and I don't know, this has been a little under-discussed, under-reported. You kind of had to seek this out on your own. But Taylor Swift did make an appearance on the New Heights podcast. That finally happened.
Is that her podcast debut?
That is her podcast debut.
She skipped hashtag dork and went right to New Heights.
We got some thoughts next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back to the Greg Hill Show. Curtis and Courtney in while Wiggy's on vacation, Greg's on vacation, Shime's on vacation. Jackson doing a great job filling in for Shime. But right now it's time for the front office report brought to you by Shaw's. Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network. Joining us now is Craig Breslow. Craig, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Not the road trip that I'm sure you were hoping for your guys, but they're coming back now to take on the Marlins tomorrow. How do you feel about them as they return home?
Yeah, it'll be good to get back home. We've played really well at Fenway for most of the season, and a tough road trip. Opportunities to win, I think, a couple more games, but those are two good teams, two very likely playoff teams playing at home. And San Diego and Houston are both obviously tough places to win.
Roman Anthony played pretty well on the road. He continues to shine and produce. How impressed have you been by such a young guy who's been able to take on the pressure head on?
Incredibly impressed. I think we saw the guys that knew him best through the draft and then early on in PD always spoke about his maturity and the calmness that he had in the box. I got to see it for myself, first last year and then in big league spring training for the first time. The way that he carried himself was just so remarkably composed. It just seems like there is no moment in a game that's too big, and always feel like he's capable of doing something really exciting in the box. And we're seeing him play better defense and run the bases really well. So I think his game is progressing incredibly well.
Craig, on Roman Anthony, how did that contract negotiation progress? When did you think you guys were close, and what do you think it says about the organization that it's done?
Yeah, I think there was the initial reaction to sending the offer over, which I think was surprise as much as it was maybe excitement or optimism, just given the timing. But I want to give a ton of credit to Roman and his family and his agent, Mark Rogers, for being open-minded and willing to work through it. But it really wasn't until the day that we got it done, which I think was Tuesday or Wednesday, that we felt like there really was a path to a deal. I think it's a great moment for the organization. Roman is someone that we believe strongly in, is going to be a cornerstone player for us for the next, decade. And, I think the ownership deserves a ton of, a ton of praise for their willingness to support this and move aggressively. And the rest of the front office and the coaching staff, who obviously have made a strong impression on Roman and his family, such that he wanted to be here and he wanted to sign this deal at this time.
Craig, when you look back at the ups and downs of this season in regards to Roman, I guess regret is the bad word to use for it, because there's no point in regretting anything. But do you maybe think that you could have brought him up sooner and maybe that would have changed some of the down parts of the season that your guys have had?
It's really hard to know. It was a complicated decision because we wanted to make sure that when we brought him up, there was a clear path to playing time. And the roster was such that, that there really wasn't. And then Willie had the oblique injury, and that gave Roman a chance to come up and play every day. And then the Devers trade, it gave us a little bit more flexibility to rotate pieces through the outfield and the DH spot. I think what we are really thankful for is the way that Roman has gotten so comfortable so quickly in the big leagues and the impact he's had on the way that we're playing and ultimately on our record.
Craig, just if you could, we haven't spoken to you since the stories were written about the deadline, in terms of Rob Bradford noted that Theo and the ownership group was all in the room. Could you take me through, like, are they there just as a sounding board, or how does the sort of the baseball department coalesce, and how big of a role does Theo and John Henry play in the decisions that you end up making?
Yeah, so I think they're as a layer of support and sounding board and, group to bounce ideas off of. Also, significant organizational decisions are ones that we want to make sure ownership is on board with and supportive. And given just how quickly the trade deadline moves, having them there is the easiest way to have some of those conversations. So we try to make sure that we're keeping everyone in the loop, but also that we are creating a good decision-making environment where, when it's necessary to meet in a smaller group or to bounce ideas off of each other, for people to push back, some of the people in the office who have done a ton of work on players and teams leading up to this moment, they have the opportunity to do so as well. So there are times where we're meeting as a larger group, sometimes as a smaller group, and sometimes where, I just need some time kind of to myself to process and digest and ultimately make decisions.
Yeah, this is a question on behalf of Greg. I know he'd be interested. Does John Henry order pizzas? Like, what's the food choice? Like, is he big like a chicken parm sub guy, sausage and peppers? What's the John Henry food order in the trade deadline war room?
We have different food out on a table that comes from some of the local restaurants, though I will say I have not seen John eat any of it, but right. It's also very frantic, so that's not to say that he hasn't. I just haven't right. been able to see it.
Is
it
true? Salad
that,
guy.
Yeah, is it true that Sam took the last slice?
I would say it's most likely true. Again, I didn't see it, but I would say that's probably a safe conclusion to draw.
Craig, one move that you guys did make before the trade deadline was Dustin May. He gets your sole win in Houston this week. What do you see his impact being for this team? I think a lot of people were down on that being the main move, but he impressed some this week.
Yeah, he was really good on Tuesday, and he struggled a little bit in his first outing, at Fenway, and I think probably trying to get comfortable and work through some pitch usage and recommendations. And then I think we saw a much more comfortable version of Dustin on Tuesday. And and we saw what he's capable of. You know, so it wasn't just, you know, the kind of bottom line there, but also when you dig in a little bit deeper and you see just the way that he was able to pound the zone and get ahead with strike one, and you know, I think it was 86 or 87% first pitch strikes and 74, 75% strikes overall. I think the usage was much more in line with you know, what he was comfortable with and what we are likely to see going forward. He's able to throw a sweeper in the zone for strikes and then to get chase both first righty and lefties through cutters a little bit more. And I think that gives him another pitch that he can attack in the strike zone. So we're excited about, you know, what he can bring. The stuff ticked up a little bit in terms of the velo. And if we get that version every 5 days, I think we're going to be in really good shape.
Craig, I just curious about, it feels different. I don't know specifically why this year feels different than last year. The record is relatively similar. I think you were about six, seven, eight games over 500 at this point last year. Why is this season different than last, and why will this stretch run be different than last year?
Yeah, it's so hard to pinpoint a single thing, but I think when you look at the, you know, the group of 26 guys and the coaching staff, there's a belief in each other. There's an excitement for coming to the field every day. We're getting contributions from everybody on the roster. You know, one day it's the starting pitching, you know, that's leading the charge. Another day, some big at bats and their guys up and down the lineup, maybe guys that have been assumed to be kind of role players who are now stepping into more prominent spots. Ultimately, I just think these guys, they enjoy each other. They love playing baseball. They love competing. And when you put all of that together, baseball is, you know, I think has always been this whole being greater than the sum of the parts type thing. And I think we're seeing that to some extent now.
For you this season, is making the postseason a successful season in your mind, or do you got to do more than that?
Yeah, I think we've been pretty adamant all winter heading into the season that, you know, our goal is a deep postseason run. Certainly making the postseason, you know, will be an improvement upon where we were the last few years. But, you know, I think that we believe our group is capable of doing more. And so, you know, I think we're gearing up for a deep postseason run. And you know, ultimately I think that's will be evaluated.
Well, that'll do it for us. Craig, thanks so much for calling. But before you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. Next week, we have the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon for you joining the Red Sox. How big of a deal is it for you guys? Or how are you preparing for the Jimmy Fund next week?
Yeah, I mean, the Jimmy Fund is it's such an important part of the work that the Red Sox do and that partnership. You know, I can remember as a player coming over and hopping on phones and taking pictures and meeting some of the patients. And it's such a great time for the players and for the organization because it's an opportunity to reflect on, you know, just how fortunate many of us are to be able to work in baseball or play baseball while there are so many who can't. And there's just a different feeling, I think, around the team. You know, great appreciation, and so it's a time that we all look forward to, and we feel really fortunate to be able to help.
Well, we're excited to see you at the ballpark next week. Good luck with the Marlins tomorrow, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thank you. Have a good morning.
Thank you so much, Craig. And that was Craig Breslow, the front office report, brought to you by Shaw's, Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network. Any nuggets from you, Curtis?
That John Henry gets his own food catered and the rest of the workers get the shared food. Yeah. This has got to be a exhilarating period because this is when you find out if everything is different. Right now, Craig Breslow looks brilliant for the Devers trade. The flexibility that allowed him, and really that sort of is one of the big markers that enabled Roman Anthony to get here. Now Roman Anthony signed for the next 8 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And there have been wins. I noted yesterday the loss last night, the night before that game they won was one that was a big one. You don't want to lose four in a row in this stretch. And then there was the game against the Phillies. There's been several markers this year where the fans have been ready to jump off and been like, we're off the bandwagon. This isn't the year. And they've been able to, you know, pull it back in. They have to win the series this weekend. I know that's Wiggy's line of the side of the street to keep saying that, but it'll be great to have meaningful baseball, hopefully, for the next month or two.
All right. Well, there you go. Right now, we got to get to what is trending.
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Leonard Hair Transplant Associates. The Red Sox dropped the last one in Houston 4-1, losing the series 2-1. Walker Buehler went 6 innings, giving up 4 runs on 4 hits while striking out 3. The guys off tonight before the Marlins come to Fenway tomorrow. If you're just joining us, you just missed Craig Breslow. You can listen to that on the Odyssey app. The NBA has signed off on the sale of the Celtics. The Board of Governors unanimously signed off on the deal for a private equity group led by Billy Chisholm to buy the team for $6.1 billion. The league says the transaction is expected to close shortly. The Patriots had their first joint practice with the Vikings yesterday. It seemed like it was an up-and-down day for Drake May and the offense. Another day without Ramondre Stevenson, while May completed a 70-yard pass to Travion Henderson, who continues to be a favorite. They've got their second joint practice, their last one before they take on the Vikings on Saturday. That practice is set for 1 p.m. today.
What about when that transfer hits, like the bank, the Wick Grosbeck family account? $2 billion. Count the zeros.
Yeah. Like, wild. What does that do? Like, what do you do? And where did I, that, the most fascinating thing I've ever asked Wiggy is, like, when you are an NFL player and you're making millions and millions and millions of dollars and you get your game check and it's direct deposit, like, it just goes onto your debit card. Like, right. All of a sudden, your account all of a sudden just says, like, $1 million.
I know. I get that feeling, too, because it's not like a normal paycheck. That's life-changing money for anybody else.
It's crazy. And it's just continuous, right, over and over and over again. It's very, very cool.
Ask Greg how that feels.
Yeah, that's right. Greg does get that every 2 weeks. Step up to your hair game and call Dr. Matthew Lopresti at Leonard Hair Transplant Associates, the hair doctor of Rob Ninkovich and Wes Welker. So change your lettuce and change your life with a free consultation, 1-800-GET-HAIR. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we have your Hill Notes.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons, joining us on the phones now here, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex, how are we doing today?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We watched that game last night. How big a performance was that for Dustin May coming off? You know, you had the three prior starters struggling and Crochet with a game that we haven't really seen very often. How important was it for Dustin May and his energy to step up for you guys?
No, it was very important for all of us. We needed, before the game, I was telling Bales that we needed 100 pitches regardless, you know, and he did that and more, right? Gave us 6 strong innings, threw a lot of strikes, was under control the whole night against a tough lineup. And, now we're in a better place tonight, bullpen-wise. We were able to reset a few guys, and we're ready.
Alex, the anomalous, unbelievable stats for Roman Anthony continue to pile up on an almost game-by-game basis. Last night, the 4 walks, the 4 runs, the home run. And there's been a little bit of a power surge lately with him matching his season-long total in home runs just over the last 2 nights. So I wanted to ask, has there been any sort of adjustment or focus on him trying to up the power game, if you will, with his swing and his plate appearances?
I think it's just the evolution of the player, right? And with him, everything is fast, right? And except he's a bat. He slows down everything. I'm very impressed, you know, just the way he controls the strike zone is something that, when you start looking around the league, you know, Juan Soto, he does that. He did it from the get-go with the Nationals, and that's what Roman is doing. And he's doing an outstanding job as a leadoff guy. Those two on top of the lineup, you got to throw it over the plate to get him out. That's the reality of it. And, you're into a tough matchup right away, and the pitch counts get up. But going back to Roman, very impressed. You know, he was hitting a lot of ground balls, but even his ground balls are different than the others, right? He hits them hard, and they go through the infield. And now he's hitting the ball in the air, which is awesome, you know, because now he's going to start hitting extra bases, and, it's just fun to watch.
Alex, you know, Bregman's goes back to Houston, and he's, you know, just hitting dingers and getting booed, and it looks like he's enjoying every minute of it. The profile of him, does it kind of fit perfectly for what you want in a player here in Boston with the pressure of playing in this ballpark up here at Fenway? Just the way he's handled his reunion there in Houston, it's probably no surprise to you, but is that something that you've always seen in him, just his ability to kind of step up in these high-pressure moments and deliver like that?
Yeah, he's able to separate everything from the game. You know, at 7:05, he's ready. Even before that, you know, he's the first one running down the line, getting ready for the game. It's just different. You know, he's a different player. And if I was a gambling man, I would have put some money that he was going to have a great week here in Houston, because that's who he is. And he's enjoying it. You know, one thing I told him before the first game here, I say, hey, man, I know you're locked in. I know you want to, you know, win every game here, but enjoy it. You have to enjoy it. You earned the right to enjoy this week. You know, the fans were great early on, and right away they switch, you know, and mm-hmm. Which is awesome. You know, that's what fan bases do, right? And yesterday he doubled to right field out of the ballpark, playing good defense, just leading the team. And, you know, this is a guy we envision. And there was a reason we wanted him. And it was to play good third base and obviously put good at-bats. But what he's doing for the culture of the team is amazing. And I was telling somebody a few days ago, if you think about it, in his career, he's played meaningful games his whole career, right? And it's getting fun with us. You know, we're in the mix of you know, the division and the walker and all that. And, you know, having a guy like him in our lineup, in our clubhouse, means a lot.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora with us here on WEEI Afternoons. Alex, there has been an influx of criticisms or stories about how you guys are handling your scouting of opposing pitchers and what they are throwing. There was the iPad thing in San Diego, Kyle Hudson in Houston here at Fenway Park, and now Tarek Skubal questioning where your base coaches stand. What is your reaction to all this?
Skubal talk about that? He talk about us?
Yeah, he doesn't think your coaches at first and third stand in the coaches' boxes.
But we haven't played them in a while. well, their third base coach doesn't stand in the third base coach either. He's my brother. But whatever. No, man, it's you prepare, and that's the way it works in the big leagues. Everybody's working. Everybody's trying to gain an edge. This is not 2017 Houston Astros. You know, we did what we did, and one thing for sure, I'm going to have that dark cloud over me my whole life. And, you know, we messed up big, and some of us pay the price, right? And I can live with that. But, you know, the league is on top of stuff, you know, the iPad stuff. Everybody has their information as long as we work, and everything goes through the league. So there's no worries, man. We're just trying to gain advantage, you know, and take advantage of situations that happens on the field. And, you know, like we always said, you know, we have to be on top of our guys too, you know, because our guys, some of them have tipped throughout the years, and we have to clean them up, and we have to do our diligence to stay on top of everything. If you don't do that at this level, you're not going to be successful.
Alex, do you think it's because of the dark cloud from years ago, or do you think it's is there something else that would lead people to scrutinize you or the organization further, let's say, than maybe other prominent franchises like the Red Sox?
I think they talk about the Yankees, what, a month ago, right? Like, they were giving signals from second base. So, you know, like, I mean, I don't know. Everybody's trying to gain an edge. And, you know, if it's a dark cloud, so be it, you know. I mean, it is what it is. I have to live with that, and I'm not afraid to talk about it. There's people that are afraid to talk about that, but I haven't been afraid to talk about what we did and how big of a mistake we made in 17. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, I would love to take it back, but it's not possible, right? We have to continue and keep growing. And, you know, when they ask questions, I have answers. And, you know, I got a family that, you know, suffered through that and is suffering through it still, you know, and that's how it is. You know, I don't, I don't get defensive about it. So, you know, if they think it's because of that, if people are talking about it because of that, so be it.
Alex, we'll take a right turn here. Last week you mentioned, you know, there was a couple of issues with bunt, putting down bunts, and the way the profile of your team's kind of made up, it just looks – it's just an athletic team, and you would think more small ball would be in play, and it feels like you – it sounded like you agreed when you were talking to Will Fleming. Have you been working on that? That was something that you were going to be you said you're going to start putting more work in. Is that something that you're focusing on now more?
Yeah, I mean – we always talk about small ball and trying to move runners over, but what are we doing as a coaching staff to be better? And obviously the roster is different than 3 days ago when we had Hamilton, but this is something that we're going to attack. You know, we're on the road right now. It's a little bit hard, you know, for early work, but we'll start doing it at home. I think we've done a much better job running the bases the last month and a half. We've been playing better defense, but, you know, with the personnel that we have and I think the pitching staff that we have, having that lead after the fifth inning, you see the record is very important. And when we have certain situations with certain guys, we will do it. But we have to, you know, just practice a little bit more that aspect and talk a little bit more. And hopefully we can be better at it.
Alex, Jordan Hicks has had some issues with command. And I know the other day he told the Boston Globe that pitch selection, him being on the same page with the catcher and maybe going with what the catcher calls instead of what he would prefer to throw, is an issue. Is that an issue for him right now, and how do you get him turned around?
No, I think he pitched well in San Diego, the two innings that he did, and then he hung a slider to Urias. But, you know, we'll keep working with him. He'll keep working with us, and he's very important for us. As you can see right now, in our roster, we got a lot of lefties in the bullpen. We got Whitlock, we got Weiser and Hicksy, you know, from the right side. So he's very important. His stuff is really good. I do believe the San Diego outing was amazing, and here it wasn't that bad. So a frustrated player just, you know, after a game, you know, just said that. But, you know, we talked to him. We'll keep working, and we'll get it straight out.
Impressive effort last night from May. Big start tonight for Buehler as they sort of jockey for the four or five spots in the rotation. But as we head into the final quarter of the season, Alex, any discussions or conversations about possibly Harrison or Toley getting a call up for the home stretch?
We've been talking about a lot of stuff. Obviously, you know, we still got hopefully two and a half months of baseball, right, in Boston. And, you know, whatever we feel that is going to make us better, we'll try to do it, you know. But as of right now, we feel good where we at. You know, May yesterday, Buehler, the last one was amazing. So just go out there and compete and see what the future holds.
Just sort of a follow-up on that pitch selection idea. I think it was Lou last night in the broadcast said when you guys acquired May, you thought maybe his cutter could be a weapon. We have Hicks talking about his pitch selection. What's that process like when guys join the team mid-season and kind of have their stuff and their way they've been doing things and then try to blend in what Andrew Bailey and the organization wants them to do?
Yeah, they have a big meeting. We have a big meeting when the player comes in, and we got, you know, the pitching club, quote-unquote, right? Tech is there, and Bales, Devin Rose. We have our analysts, and we go over, pitch usage in the past and how we see it. Sometimes we don't even change it, right? But we make suggestions based on their profile, and we go from there, you know, and we show them the why we think is going to work, you know. And the pitcher, of course, has an input, you know, and he'll tell us what he's gone through, not only with the last organization, but if he pitched for others, you know, their thought process, how they were thinking, why the pitch mix was this and now is different compared to 2 years ago, and then we go to attack, you know. That's the way it works.
All right, before we let you go, we saw that Marcelo Meyer did some baseball activities. Are you optimistic where that might go?
I mean, we're far away from that, from, you know, from getting him in on field, but I think he's taking the right steps, and the fact that he wants it bad, man, and hopefully we can get him back.
All right, Alex, good night. Good luck tonight, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks, Alex. Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox here on WEEI Afternoons. Up next, it's 3 o'clock. That means it's time for the three-point stance.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
This is Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app.
And take Boston Sports Original
everywhere you go.
2-1. Here's the pitch. Breaking ball hammered to deep left field. It is back. It is gone. Into the Crawford boxes. Narvaez does break it open. Now that is a bat, and it's 5-0 Red Sox.
High noon, Jones and Keefe, WEEI. We'll get to the Red Sox momentarily. Nice win for them last night. Whole bunch of runs piled up. Dustin May, a little bit of attitude.
Dustin
there.
May.
New bit of fan a personality. Favorite? Maybe. Show
how many,
favorite.
How many good starts do you need to string together for people to really get your attention?
Ooh.
Couple, two, three?
Three.
Three good starts in a row, and we're going to be like,
good starts. Not great starts. Last night was arguably a great start.
It was a great start. Six scoreless, eight Ks.
So three good ones.
Yeah, because the first one wasn't.
Then the whole show has the green light to go as Dustin May for Halloween.
Don't want to spoil it, but we're thinking we all go as different versions of Dustin May. Dodgers Dustin May, Beach Dustin May, right. Business Dustin right. May.
The analogy would be like in Neighbors, they have the De Niro party.
Any version of De Niro you want.
We do that, but all Dustin May.
Yeah, he's got the flowing locks.
Yeah.
The shiny red hair. And he's got some good stuff. They were throwing more cutters last night. Not to get too inside baseball, Jones.
Oh, the pitch mix.
The cutter percentage went way up
it's
from his time
in
L.A. to his time now.
So we'll get to the Red Sox here in a moment. Just updating you on a couple of things. Number one, how about this for foreshadowing from Mike Reese?
Yeah, I saw this.
Mike Vrabel speaks 25 minutes from now. You'll hear it live here on Jones and Keefe when he hits the podium or whatever it is, scrum, in Minnesota. Reese says one of the many storylines for Patriots-Vikings is that Kendrick Bourne is not expected to participate as he continues to recover. I go, well, that's not a big storyline.
No. However,
the next line, he says that opens up more potential opportunities for UDFA Efton Chisholm III. We call him EC3.
Yeah.
Who has been ascending.
Yeah, I don't think he's making the team. I don't think Kendrick Bourne was a part of the equation. I don't think Kendrick Bourne's making the team.
But I don't think Reese calls Chisholm a huge storyline unless he thinks he's got a real shot of making the team.
No, Mike might be right about this. And there's a lot of people that are very pro Efton Chisholm. And I don't know. I just didn't really see much of it when we were at camp. It seemed like he had good OTAs. Seems like he's had some moments where he's been good. Obviously, he was the one receiver that stood out in the preseason game. But none of that was with Drake May. So you sort of take it for what it was. But for him to be thrown out there, like I didn't think Kendrick Bourne was guaranteed a spot. So now you're like, oh, he's not going to make the team. So maybe Chisholm could. Like,
well, you know what? I do. I agree with when you put it that way. I agree with
you
that.
Know, like
I didn't
the
think
depth
Bourne
chart,
was making the team either way.
If you said Mac Hollins or Steph Diggs was going to start the year on PUP, right? Because they both came in with something, and then now they're both fine. Then I would say, all right, those were two lock spots that now at least early in the season there's an opening. Then maybe Chisholm gets in there. But we've done this a bunch of times. Diggs, Hollins are your two free agent signings. Kyle Williams is your rookie draft pick. There's three spots. Your two best receivers in camp have been Pop and Booty.
Yep.
That's so five.
The question is if they keep six, is he the sixth?
Yeah.
That's what it comes.
Do they keep six? First question.
If they only keep five, he's not on the team.
And if they keep six.
Is it him or Baker?
Yeah, because it's not Polk. It's not going to be Polk. And then Bourne, unfortunately, like Bourne, I think, would have been in a dogfight for sixth. So I guess to Mike Reese's point, all right, if they end up keeping six, you take one of the three or four guys out of that spot. So now Chisholm, just numbers-wise, has a better chance. I think Baker's been better.
Yeah. Well, I think he, when we were there, certainly made more flash plays. Yeah. No doubt about it. And
he's shown up on special teams, on teams, John.
Which I don't care about, but coaches care about.
Well, if you're going to keep a sixth receiver, he probably should play special teams.
Well, Chisholm will play special teams, but differently. He would do it in a potential returner role.
Yeah, but they got returners.
Well, I agree. But, you know, Marcus Jones hasn't made it through a year healthy ever.
No, I know. But that's why I still think Chisholm could just make the practice squad, and then you call him up if Marcus Jones gets hurt, and now he's your game day call up, and he returns punts. Because Marcus Jones can return punts, but so can Pop Douglas. We saw Travion Henderson return a kickoff 100 yards, so I don't think I need Chisholm doing any of those. They even had Kyle Williams at practice returning punts. So maybe that's how he even makes the team more, is like the backup punt returner guy. Chisholm, I don't know. I mean, it'd be a great story. It'd be fun. I don't see him making
The only reason I find it noteworthy, and I don't mean to dwell on a guy who's like 51st on a roster if he makes it.
But at least it's a fun position.
Well, it is, and I just kind of know how Reese operates, and I think he's very, very exceptionally plugged in. And when he says, boy, this is a big storyline to monitor, I don't think it's out of nowhere, is my personal opinion on that, but I guess we'll see. One more storyline that is going to impact the Patriots early on in the year, or at least potentially could. Dolphins pass rusher Chop Robinson had to be carted off at joint practices today with the Lions.
Oh, boy.
So, number one, there's some danger in these joint practices with more contact than you would get. But number two, that's one of the names we highlighted earlier this year. Welcome to the NFL, Will Campbell. It's Max Crosby. It's Chop Robinson. It's TJ Watt. Well, that's one less guy you got to face. And it's in the division. And the Dolphins already feel like they're teetering on a team that could fire Mike McDaniel and massively underachieve. And that's a big, big. If you just watched two Dolphins games last year, they were both against the Pats. The guy was a terror last year.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why 9-10 wins is in play for the Patriots is the out-of-division schedule is very easy, but the division's not as tough, and that's just another reason for it. You know, four games against the Dolphins and the Jets looks a lot better going into this season than it did going into the last few.
Chop Robinson somehow only had 6 sacks last year. What did he have in the two Pats?
All against the Pats. Turns out, not that good.
He had 1.5 in one game against the Pats. He had none somehow in the other game. But I feel like he felt like he was unblockable against the Patriots last year. But that's a big loss.
Well, you know
who's
on Minnesota and was awesome for Minnesota, who destroyed the Pats when he was in Miami?
Yeah. I was going to say Danielle Hunter. He wasn't in
Miami. No. Andrew Van Ginkle.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Van Ginkle?
Yeah.
He was like a killer against the Pats that one year. And then last year, he had a great year, his first year in Minnesota. So we'll see him again.
Okay. So you can discuss there. Again, Mike Vrabel comes your way about 20 minutes from now. You'll catch it live here on Jones and Keith. 617-779-7937. Let's get back into the Red Sox. Nice win last night. Dustin May, kind of a fun showing for him and a really good outing for him. Is it possible Breslow stumbled onto something? Maybe. Let's see. I need way more of a sample size than that. I'll give him credit for a good start. I'm going to need to see more out of him and Matz, for that matter. But the early returns on both have not been bad. Maybe Breslow did a little better than we thought at the deadline. But again, I don't want to go nuts on that one until we see more. When it comes to the Red Sox and the way they're playing, Keith, we mentioned this earlier in the show. They are comfortably the number 2 wild card. Just a few days ago, they were the top wild card, closing in on Toronto. So I think they should make the playoffs. If they don't, they've failed. And we agree on that.
Yo, 100%.
You have to make the playoffs. Missing the playoffs at this point is a failure. You need to justify the Devers trade. You need to justify the trade deadline in action. You need to not slump in August under Alex Cora again. Like, you have to make the playoffs, bare minimum. But you are the top offense in the American League. You scored the most runs in the league this year. You have the best run differential in the American League. If you're asking me what makes for a successful year, and it's not binary, it's not success or fail. They fail if they miss the playoffs. I think making the postseason, there's some gray area there. It's not a failure, but it's kind of meeting my present-day expectations. What elevates it to a successful year? Win in that wild card, you know, win a round, and advance in the postseason. I think that, to me, now would make it a success. Obviously, you go farther than that. ALCS, World Series, a championship. I mean, that would all be gravy.
Oh, of course.
But what would make it a successful year, and just I've elevated my expectations enough where I expect them to be a playoff team. What would make it a success going one step further than that to me?
I'll just take the playoffs for me, because they've made the playoffs once in the last 6 years. They've had a bunch of last place finishes in there, and almost every September it was who cares who's playing, who cares what the result is. They were just out of it at that point. So at least you know if they hang on to one of these wild card spots, because the division seems further and further away now. But if they are holding on to a playoff spot, every game now matters. Like, every game the rest of the way which is great. And then if you get in the playoffs, I maintain that if you make the playoffs, you're a World Series contender. And therefore, by that same logic, if you make the playoffs, you can also get bounced in the first round. I think it was last year, all the 100-win teams lost in the first round. And so...
Really?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Like the Orioles. Remember, like the Orioles were insane. They lost like right away. So there is something fluky about the baseball playoffs. It can cut both ways.
Well, that's why I say it's a bit of a gray area.
Yeah.
It also depends on how they lose.
Who they play, what it looks like. You get swept. Like, yeah, there's a lot of different...
Were you leading in the series? Were you blowing leads late?
If it comes down to like three bonehead decisions and they're booting the ball around, sure. But if you just... Say you play Seattle in a series and it's a hard-fought series. You know, the big dumper is hitting home runs and, you know, the Mariners' good rotation is pitching their tails off. All right. Like, you tip your cap and maybe the Mariners go on and win the whole thing. You're like, I'm not going to lose my mind. That's why, for me, it's pretty cut and dry. Like, if you miss the playoffs, it's an absolute failure because you were in a playoff position at the time of the deadline, so you knew what your team was. You remain 2 weeks after the deadline, even with a little bit of losing in there, you remain a playoff team. And the rest of the American League, there's not seven good teams. Six are going to make the playoffs. Right now, the seventh team in the American League is the Cleveland Guardians, whose closer was fixing games, and they traded away a bunch of their pieces.
They are playing good baseball. They've won eight out of 10.
No, I know they are.
And Jose
Ramirez night.
They were on a win streak until a couple of days ago. They're six games over 500, but minus run differential, as you just said, Class A is caught up in a gambling scam. Like, they're going to fall apart.
No. So that's why if you get in, I'll say good for you. You got in. You're building up all this good experience for Roman Anthony. You know, Garrett Crochet will get a taste of being a number one starter in the playoffs. Like, all that stuff is good for me. And then you say, all right, you got a good young nucleus and you locked a lot of these guys up. Now the expectation going forward will change a little bit. Like, now it won't just be make the playoffs. It's going to be you got to advance. Whereas this year, I'll take it. I'll just take a playoff appearance.
So I asked this to the fans. We already went through this earlier. Red Sox fans, listeners, who scares you in the American League? I agree with you, Keith. Anybody can beat you. It is the baseball playoffs. So I'm not saying the Red Sox can't
lose. Least want to play?
Yeah,
in that way?
Toronto. Do they scare you? Does Detroit scare you? Seattle?
Maybe Seattle. The more I think about Seattle.
But we might just be victims of the moment. They've won eight in a row and nine out of ten.
That's fine.
So you're asking me today? My answer is probably Seattle is the scariest team in the American League.
But they didn't have Suarez and Naylor until recently.
Correct.
So then you add that with the big dumper and with Julio Rod and their rotation.
We've always believed in their pitching. They needed some bats. They went out and got them. To me, if I had to hone in on a scary team, it's them.
Their fourth starter was an all-star this year.
Woo?
Yeah, I think he's probably their fourth if you look at the depth chart. Now, he might not be having the fourth best season, but I'm just saying like he is probably their fourth guy.
Astros, Yankees, Guardians, even down to the Rangers. Like, who's a true scary team in the American League? So the AL is wide open. In a series, there's not a team I look at where I say the Red Sox couldn't beat that team. And then take it a step farther. I think the offense is legit, Keith. And when I say that, I still feel like I hear this commentary. Maybe it's in my head. Maybe it's a straw man argument.
All right.
But I feel like it's still out there. And I was even guilty of it to a degree. I'm like, they need another right-handed bat at first base, which they can upgrade Toro. But I don't feel like in the aftermath of the Devers trade, this offense is an Achilles heel that'll be exposed in October. I feel like some people feel that way about this team. I think they've proven themselves post-Devers. That's getting Bregman back.
Yeah.
That's Anthony getting comfortable at the big league level. That's Duran locking back in where he was not really that early on in the season. I think they have a legitimate offense, and I don't think it's going to be a problem in October. And I don't think they miss, even though it's not a traditional lineup, 3-4-5, huge bats, huge power in the middle of the order. I think I do trust this offense to score. So if you think the offense is legit, and you believe in the numbers, and it's not just, well, they score in bunches one night, like last night where they score 14, and then they struggle to score other days, and it's an inconsistent offense. I feel like some people view it that way. If you think the offense is legit, and you believe in Crochet as a guy who can carry you through the postseason, this is a team that should be able to make a run. So I think they need to do more than just make the playoffs to be a true success.
I look at their offense as, like, I do think it is legit, and remember early on there was some pushback when we would say where they ranked in offense, and people would say, well, Rafael Devers was part of the team for so long, which was true, and Devers was had a ton of RBI, and Devers was a part of that, but it's been so many games since then, and we've seen performances like this often enough. We've seen what Roman Anthony is. There were times where you know, Trevor Story and Sadon Rafaela never looked like they could even record an out. Like, those guys were so locked in. So there's been hot streaks, cold streaks, whatever. I still think Toro, to me, stands out as, like, the one guy in the lineup where you're like, eh, they could do better than that. Like, everybody else deserves to be in the lineup. Everybody else, even Narvaez, I don't know, got cooled way off, homered last night, where you're like, all right, there's guys fighting to be in the lineup. You're like, Willie Abreu, not an easy out. He should be in the lineup. Like, obviously, Roman Anthony, Bregman, those are your top guys. Toro stands out where, like, if that was Naylor or if that was, and I don't even think O'Hearn is that good, but he's better than Toro. Like, if one of the guys that moved at the deadline was in instead of Toro, that might be my one criticism I would have for that. But other than that, most nights, 1 through 9, looks like a legitimate lineup.
Yeah.
Like a great lineup.
And I mean, we've seen some of these playoff teams recently, right? Like, we've watched the Red Sox go head to head with some of these teams, even huge offenses in the National League that we saw. You know, the Phillies that we saw, the Padres, like, there are holes at the bottom of those orders.
Yeah.
Even the Astros right now. So I think.
Where do you think they rank in home runs? Because, well, like, anecdotally.
Well, yeah. I only know this because I heard Fitzy yesterday asking for more home runs out of Roman Anthony. Wait. Ask and ye shall receive.
Seriously, back-to-back nights with a home run for Roman.
Homers in back-to-back games. I believe they're 11th in baseball?
10th in baseball.
10th in baseball.
They're 10th in baseball. Yeah.
Now, they might have moved up. They hit a lot of them last night, so maybe they moved up a spot.
That's true. Yeah. And they're four behind the Mets, who are ninth. The Yankees are first.
But this is why I think some people don't fully believe. And I'm not saying this about Fitzy. I'm just saying in general, it's not – Duran's not a traditional three hitter. So I think people look at it and go, they missed that big bopper in the order. The home runs would align with that.
Well, they don't really have, like, a true, like, home run hitter on their team necessarily. I don't know if any of their guys that you like, that's their best thing that they
do. Do you know who has the most home runs on the Sox? It's Abreu, right?
My guess would be Abreu. I'll look it up. My guess is Abreu.
I think it's Abreu, and then it's probably Story, unless I'm missing somebody.
All right, let's play Name Those Sox with Home Runs.
Yeah.
Leader, Willie Abreu.
Yeah, two is Story?
21 dongs. Two is Story, 18 dongs. Three.
Okay. After that, I'm going to guess...
With 16 dongs.
It's either Bregman or Rafaela.
Bregman is three.
Is Rafaela right after that?
No, Devers is still fourth on the team.
Okay.
Then Rafaela.
Got it.
Jaron Duran is 12. Narvaez just hit his 10th. Those are all the guys with double-digit home runs. But there are 12 playoff teams in Major League Baseball. They have the 10th most home runs. They score even more runs. They hit a lot of doubles. They got a bunch of guys with speed. Right? So, yeah, they don't – but they also don't have – Cal Raleigh or Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge, who will kind of like tip the scales in some of these numbers. So, yeah, you would like to see long-term that number go up a little bit and rank a little bit higher, but I think that's pretty good considering they don't have a 30-home run guy on their team. They don't have anybody close yet.
And I'll tell you, you could always add one to the team. I'm not saying don't go get one, like, in the offseason. I'd love Pete Alonso on this
Suarez
team.
Was available. He had 36 home runs, I think, at the time. Right. You could have plunked that down.
So, like, they should have done that at the trade deadline. I'm not arguing with that. I'm not saying they shouldn't sign it in the offseason. But to win in advance in the postseason this year, I don't think they need that. And I think they've shown they can score. And they can score with the best teams in baseball. 617-779-7937. We got all your phone calls there, all your feedback there. Mike Vrabel scheduled to speak in the next 10 minutes in Minnesota. You'll hear it live here on Jones and Keefe right after Trending with Billy Laney.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending is brought to you by the 99 Restaurants. The Red Sox are back in the win column after snapping a 3-game losing streak with last night's 14-1 blowout win over the Astros in Houston. Dustin May earned his first win with the Red Sox after pitching 6 scoreless innings and striking out 8. The rubber match in this series is tonight. First pitch is at 7:10. You can hear the call of the game with Will Fleming and Lenny Donato right here on 93.7. And across the Shaw's and Style Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. Walker Buehler will get the start for the Sox against the Astros' Hunter Brown. Don't forget to tune into the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show with Christian Ockhand at 6:10. And today is day one of Patriots joint practice with the Vikings in Minnesota. Practice begins at 1 o'clock, and head coach Mike Vrabel will meet with the media at 12:30. You can catch Mike Vrabel's press conference right here on 93.7. Visit the 99 Monday through Wednesday for their newest big deal meal, the Crispy Fried Twin Catch with North Atlantic Cod and Crispy Shrimp for just $14.99. You gotta love the nines. I'm Billy Laney. That's what's trending now.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon, 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station.
My three-point stance today, I'm calling for Roman Anthony, try to maybe alter that swing just a little bit and give the Red Sox a little extra punch, pop, and power in their lineup.
Roman drives one high and deep into right center field. It is back, and it's gone! A homer for Roman.
Dustin May. Yeah, that's why he's going to go 6 2/3. That's a little bit of blind faith, but hell, that's all I got right now.
Strike three called. Fastball 96. 8 strikeouts for May.
I think I know more now.
I had no idea how intelligent he was.
Go, 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 go!
This is WEEI Afternoons.
With Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
The Red Sox win. Fitzy and Hart win. Predictions galore.
You guys are so smart.
Ted Johnson victory lap here for WEEI Afternoons.
Take it.
I learned it from watching you, Ted. Victory laps are what we do. When you're right, you need to tell everybody you were right. And I just want to point out that Mr. Negativity, Andy Hart, everybody's too negative. Why are you so negative? Why are you so I had faith in Dustin May. And that faith was rewarded.
Was that faith in Justin May, or is it just like, you know what, the last time I ripped him for putting out a pitcher that I had to pay tickets to go see the game for, it turned out, who was that? It was Criswell.
That's why
he didn't
pay.
Criswell syndrome.
He didn't pay for those tickets either.
Okay, he didn't pay.
No, he didn't.
Right. But he had, his family made the effort to come see the game. And then Cooper went out there and just pitched a gym. So now he's like, well, I can't do that anymore. And
even a broken clock, Ted.
No.
Twice a day.
It's baseball. Yep. Baseball, VCR. I said it yesterday, when you think you have baseball pegged and you think you know exactly what's going to happen in the sport of baseball, in my opinion, more than almost any other, it goes, you idiot. That's not what's going to happen. Yeah. So we'll go out. Plus, Dustin May went out there. He pitched well, and he pitched with emotion. I've said, because Alex Cora has said a lot, that emotion and excitement for a baseball team has to come from the lineup, has to come from the offense. This was a game where there was some emotion that was brought to the contest by the starting pitcher. He had, I think it was the second inning, he got a big out. He's like, you're not exactly going Mark the Bird Fidrich.
Oh, no,
but
that was Pivetta-esque. Like, he was pumping fists and fired up, and as he should, especially when idiots like me went on the radio yesterday and said there was 0.0% chance he could carry the team to a dub last night. My bad, coach. Yep.
And he also talked about, well, you know what? I've kind of had a crappy year. I've had a lot of downtimes. Yeah. There's been a lot of long innings and long
crappy
games.
Few years.
Yes, actually. Well, guess what?
Happy half decade.
Enjoy it. I remember, and Ted will get mad at me here.
Oh, we'll see.
But your boy, Bill Belichick, there was one year.
Hey, first segment, BMI or Bill Belichick?
There was
first segment, BMI or Bill Belichick?
There was first 5 minutes, too. That's right.
When does Mason Miller come in?
There was one year where he told his team specifically to celebrate, because this sport is hard, and when you make a play in the NFL, celebrate it, enjoy it. You put a lot of work into that. I'd say the same thing is true for Dustin May. When you put in start after start where you suck, multiple years where you kind of suck and things aren't going your way, and you're probably doing the Walker Buehler questioning, do I still have what it takes to compete in the big leagues anymore? When you go out there and you pitch a gem, and that was a gem.
Got to feel good.
Right? So enjoy it. Celebrate it. Do whatever comes natural. If there's emotion that's bubbling up, release it. Enjoy it. Because the other thing is, baseball could come back around and he might go, you know, 2/3 of an inning with 8 runs next game.
You know the profile of some of these pitchers? It's kind of amazing. If you were to just dissect every pitcher in the major leagues, how many of them have missed big chunks of time in their careers because of injury?
Yep.
And it's and then they get back, and then they get injured again. It's just one of the more frustrating types of positions to play in all sports. And so I'm with you guys. I did love the excitement, and that was partly because he missed 2 years for injury and was, you know, missed half of last year.
And also,
it almost feels like now, like every pitcher, Andy, has to have at least one, if not two, Tommy Johns over the course of a 10-plus year career.
Well, I've told you this. They are now doing it preemptively. There are parents, young pitchers that are having relatively minor elbow issues or issues that maybe they could treat another way, and they're like, nah, just do it. Let's just get it out of the way. It's going to happen sooner or later, so let's do it sooner so I can recover. You know, as young as like the high school level, even below that, pre-high school level. But you look at Dustin May, great for him. It's great for him as an individual. Also, was big for the Boston Red Sox, right? You got Walker Buehler going to the mound tonight. You'd lost with Crochet. You were coming off the Bayo, Giolito, Crochet. Oh, my three best pitchers didn't win a game. Well, I'm going to need somebody to win a game, or this is going to become a long extended streak. All of a sudden, you might be balancing out that seven-game winning streak you just had with a seven-game losing streak.
Whoa!
And Dustin May goes to the mound and says, not on my watch. And then the offense gets to their bullpen. Then you pile up runs. Now, whether that's one of those games where you say, are they really the best offense in the American League, or did they kind of beat up on a bullpen? Don't care. They scored 14 runs. Those all count, right? Like, they all count. Now you have the best run differential in the American League, one of the best run differentials in baseball. And Roman Anthony hits a bomb, so Fitzy's happy. Two games in a row, Roman Anthony hits a bomb. Another note where it's only basically him and Ted Williams, youngest players, home runs, back-to-back days.
What did he have? Four walks, a home run, and four runs scored? Like,
never been done.
I mean, the anomalous streak of things that this kid is doing at the age of 21 is mind-boggling. And it's only due to a deep foundational belief in his almost now alien-like or otherworldly abilities to think that he can still hit with crazy exit velocity, crazy accuracy, with such incredible patience at the plate, and still every now and again dial it up and go for bombs. That was 4:30 last night. Like, that's no, like, it's only a home run in 7 out of 30 parks. Like, no, that was out of every park last night. And I don't care how the final score got to be Patriots 14, Texans nothing, Andy. Like, that's a morale builder, especially when you get six innings from the guy who only gave you 3 1/3 last week.
And another morale builder has to be Carlos Narvaez, who hasn't been hitting good. That home run, it was, if you listen to that call, we might have to pull this call up. I can't remember. I might have been on TV by this time when I was watching it, where the ball, didn't even kind of have a chance to say, oh, it's back. It looks like it's a home run. It was like, Narvaez hits the ball. It's a home run.
Yep.
Like, it was out so damn fast that I've never seen a home run get out of the Ripped field it. Of play as fast as that Carlos Narvaez home run.
So the Red Sox get a, Fitzy will say it, sneaky big win, sneaky important win
sneaky
last
bigs.
Night in Houston. Yeah. They'll be back at it tonight. Dustin May gets a big win. We'll talk to the manager of the Boston Red Sox in about 20 minutes, 2:30 here on WEEI Afternoons. But this Dustin May start is interesting because I was watching on TV and they were talking about, apparently, when they acquired Dustin May, there was something to do with his cutter, and the Red Sox think his cutter's a weapon. And I think it was Lou Maloney was like, I don't know, they're hitting like 470 off of it or something. I'm not sure it's a weapon. And I find that interesting. Like, you join a team midseason, especially a team like the Red Sox that seems to have a very specific pitching approach
philosophy.
And what Andrew Bailey, and he sees things and what he wants. So, you know, some numbers from first start to second start for Dustin May. First start, it was 30% four-seamer, 24% sweeper, 14% sinker, and then 30% that cutter, which Lou had heard the Red Sox thought might be a weapon. Well, maybe they realized it wasn't a weapon. I don't know, because last night the cutter was down to 20%. And the sweeper was actually up to 37%. The four-seam was down a little bit, and the sinker was up. So he became more sinker-sweeper than it was four-seam cutter.
Love those pitches. Love those pitches.
And I just think that's really interesting. Now, does this mean anything? Did he just maybe have a good night? Sure. It could be a one-off. Could be my thing. Aberrational, blind faith, whatever. Or did you take a step in the right direction because maybe you're working with Andrew Bailey and figuring things out?
Part of that emotion might be just like, look, I finally found a place where they understand me and can give me a good game plan. And I'm starting to realize maybe what my full potential is. Beside all those numbers are great. He also had a 85% first strike. First pitch strike.
Absolutely.
And that is part of, I think, what has changed over the last month and a half or so, when it felt like the Red Sox, post Rafi Devers, started changing their approach to hitting and pitching, is when they said, you know, we got to attack more on first pitches. And they're doing that, and you can see the pitching has gotten better because they are attacking the zone early in the count.
And the other thing I would just throw out there, and I don't know if this matters or not, The Dodgers were getting pitchers back, and they knew Dustin May was not part of their, and he knew it. He's a smart guy. He sees what's going on. Oh, I'm not really needed here. I'm not really wanted here. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox need Dustin May. Like, mm-hmm. they need him to be good. We're talking about Toley, Peyton. Oh, we're going to blow him through AAA and get him to, like, if Dustin May doesn't do the job, they're looking for, like, they need him to be good. And I just wonder if maybe that faith that they have in him and to go out and get him, even if we think it was rushed at the end of the trade deadline.
Oh, very much.
Could it give him a little boost of confidence?
But isn't it funny, too? Yesterday, trade deadline. Oh, I didn't do enough to trade deadline. Trade deadline. We lost three in a row. Our top three pitch. We needed more pitching.
Yep.
And now today, it's like, oh, great call to trade deadline, getting Dustin Mays. They saw something in him that no one else did. So, just a very interesting sport indeed when you consider how the ebbs and flows go. With
it's amazing.
Well, the roller coaster of the sport, and especially this team. I mean, this is the whole, like, if there were any one something you would say is the hallmark of the 2025 Red Sox, would you say it's their roller coaster-esque nature of emotions?
No, yeah, probably. You know, question. You start how the season started, all right. The good vibes with Seiden and Bregman, and then Rafi Devers, no. And then, okay, now we're down again. And then, then you start the season out like they – and then the injuries with Casas. And,
yep.
And so, yeah, it's been one of the more up-and-down kind of emotional seasons, more than I can remember.
And there's so much time for that because of the marathon that is. I heard Dave O'Brien, Lou Maloney talking last night on the broadcast about, well, there's 40 games left.
Yeah.
And 40 games ago, this season wasn't going where the Red Sox wanted. Then you got hot, you got a 10-game winning streak, you get a 7-game winning. And so that puts into perspective, but yeah, now you got to finish it. You've put yourself in position to make the playoffs. You're in that conversation. But if you go the opposite way you went for the last 40 games, you're in trouble. And there's a lot of time to screw this up. And that's where a guy like Dustin May comes into the picture. And his performance, just to put it in perspective, it's the 15th time this season a Red Sox starter has worked 6-plus shutout innings. 5 of those were by Lucas Giolito. 4 of those were by Crochet. And just to put that in perspective, only the Yankees and the Tigers have more. They have 17 starts like that. 6 innings, 0 runs allowed. And obviously you're going to be Crochet, but Giolito was in that mix as well. Not that I'm expecting Dustin May to do that probably ever again this season, right? We got to keep our expectations in real land.
In check?
In check a little bit.
Do we have to, though? Because then if we start going into it like with the sort of negative anticipation I did last night, I don't know what good that does you. I mean, keeping them in check, sure. He's not going to throw 6-7 with no runs allowed, but he didn't do that by accident. There's obviously some sort of beast in there that got uncapped last night.
And that's where I wonder if they get some credit for that. Again, it's a one-off. We got to wait to see. But the biggest thing for me, for both Dustin May and Walker Buehler, is Fitzy, don't make us think the way you were thinking yesterday. Don't make us think that in those 2 days in the rotation, there's no hope, that those are guaranteed losses. Because, A, that's a crappy way to look at a game and to go into a game. It also puts ridiculous amount of pressure for the other 3 guys in the rotation to be perfect. And while I think Crochet was a one-off, and I think Bayo might even be a one-off, Giolito, I don't know what Giolito is at this point in a season where he's been ridiculously good at stretches. You see it right there. He's second on the team in those, 6 innings shutout pitching. I think you need these guys to at least feel, we got a shot tonight. We might have to score a few runs, but luckily we have the best offense in the American League. But these guys will give us a shot. It goes back to those games we talked about early in the season where games were over in the first inning. You don't want these guys going to the mound and you as a fan or you as a teammate or you as a manager thinking, yeah, it's probably going to be a bullpen night. I'm probably going to need to get about 6 out of the bullpen. Just give us quality starts, right? Just give us the hope that it's not going to be a stinker of a start. And he gave you reason to believe that that could be a possibility.
I mean, I think part of the issue with really feeling confident in the starting pitching is guys haven't done it. I mean, you got Crochet's pitching, already pitched more innings than he's ever pitched, and so we still got a lot of games to play.
Yep.
You look at Lucas Giolito, the last 2 years combined, he's only played in 12 games.
Yep.
And Bayo has never really done it for any sustainable length of time. So it's the guys that you're counting on have never done it before, ever in their past. So you go, okay, what makes you think they can do it now? And that's why there's a reservation, I think.
And Fitzy, your guy, I know we're going to get into this a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Roman Anthony, this idea that he can do more, he can be more. Well, I keep saying, as long as you keep putting the game notes together and it says, Roman Anthony was the first since Ted Williams to do X, Y, and Z, which I feel like every night. Now, I will also say when I read a lot of those notes, they also have Rafi Devers in there. And I don't know how that makes me feel because we lived the Rafi Devers experience, the good, the bad of it, and the whole totality of
how hot he came in years ago, Andy. And then then expectations weren't met. Then we had attitude problems. And then we were told to put gloves away. And then we told Breslow and Bresbot what he could do with his job. Yeah, if it's like first since Ted Williams, first since Yaz, first since whomever, it's just a nonstop parade of unique statistical accomplishments for this kid, which is spectacular. And I love. Guys, this could be the best case scenario. If they come out of tonight with a quality start for Bueller and a win, just think about the fact that 48 hours ago, we were in panic mode, like, oh, no, the top three starters lost and crude cripes. Now they got May and Bueller coming up. What's going to happen? And it could be, hey, they got two guys vying for the fourth starter spot. Maybe next time through the rotation, the top three do well. And, you know, the optimism is back on track.
Right, because if you do that, if you play that projection game, you expect Crochet to win. And you probably now expect to win one of the other two games, right? Whether it's Bayo or Giolito.
Right.
Based on the way the season's gone.
Correct.
That doesn't mean it's right.
Yep.
Okay, so that's two wins out of every five right there.
Yep.
If you steal one of these, now you're like...
You're thinking playoff series.
Yeah. Now I'm like, well, that's three wins.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard to talk
yourself
into that.
Give me two out of three good pitch outings in the playoffs with this offense, and you like your chances.
Right. And I do think... We need to accept that this offense is pretty good. I know we've had our doubts, you know, are they piling up runs against bad bullpens or bad teams, or are they too streaky? And they're still streaky. You still got to deal with some guys that are streaky, but you're also going to deal with, I don't know, the top of the order with Roman Anthony, who we all just need to accept what they've told us all along. He's good beyond his years.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely good beyond his years. And then your guy, St. Bregman, is just good, right? He's just good.
Yep.
So you put those two in, and you're like,
good.
Okay, we're well on our way. That's a good way to start a game, right? Even last night, I actually thought it was going to go better last night. I think they had two guys on in the first. I'm like, oh, they're gonna pounce on this. They're going to blow them out early. They didn't end up scoring then. It took a little bit a while, but that's as good a 1-2 as I feel like you could want right now.
Yeah, the midday show, I had to go, you know, kind of just go through the lineup. You go, who would you want to take off? And it's... I mean, who would you want to take out of the lineup? I mean, maybe Abraham Toro, maybe, but the rest of the guys, would you feel comfortable pulling any of these guys out of the lineup?
Well, if I was like, if I had a crystal ball and I knew when it was their slump time and I knew like, oh, for 3 days they're going to be bad, that's when I would do it.
Yeah.
But I'd also want to make sure my crystal ball tells me when they're going to carry the team and be hot as can be for a 2 or a 3 day stretch, or sometimes more than that, a week. So Boston Red Sox win 14-1 in Houston. My guy. Dustin May.
My guy,
jeez. Dustin May.
Every day there's a new one, Ted.
Boy, you just jump on those coattails so fast.
He was so good last night. He's the new D. May in my world. Drake May, you're old news, Drake May. Dustin May's the winner around here.
You know what? Say it like one of my guys, because you have a lot of my guys.
I do.
You can't
sometimes
have all these my guys.
I can.
And
big sports world.
Don't worry, Teddy. Tune in tomorrow to see if he's still his guy, and I think I know
that's
the answer.
That's
I'm going to do a parody to my girl. My guys.
Yeah, why don't we do New Guy Thursday or something? We check in every week on who Andy's new guy is.
What you also need to do is wait about 5 days to see how he pitches next time to see if I dump him to the curb faster than you know
what.
When they need to call up my guy Cooper Criswell just pitching his spot.
That's my guy in person. 617-779-7937. We are reacting to Dustin May's great performance. Big win for the Boston Red Sox. And up next, we will hear from the manager, his reactions to what Dustin May did and what his team is doing right now, and maybe what some other teams are accusing his team of doing. The manager, Alex Cora, will be up next. But first, Dan Ball, what's trending?
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Red Sox beat the Houston Astros 14-1 last night. Dustin May earned the win, going 6 shutout innings. In the game, Roman Anthony joined Hall of Famer Ted Williams as the only Red Sox players in club history with 21 extra base hits and 32 walks over their first career 52 games. Not bad company at all. The rubber game of that series is tonight. First pitch at 7:10. Walker Buehler will start for the Sox opposite Hunter Brown. And you can listen to the game on WEEI FM 93.7 and across the show Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. Mass Mutual pregame show with Christian Arcanis tonight at 6:10. And Will Fleming and Lenny DiNardo have the call of the game. New within the hour, the Celtics NBA Cup group play schedule has been released. The four games are as follows. The Celtics will play against the Philadelphia 76ers October 31st at 7 at Philly. They'll play November 7th at 7 at the Orlando Magic. Then November 21st at home against the Brooklyn Nets. And November 26th at home against the Detroit Pistons. The Patriots took the field for a joint practice with the Minnesota Vikings today in Minnesota. New England will play Minnesota in their second preseason contest on Saturday. Kickoff for that one is at 1 p.m. And from around the NFL, running back James Cook and the Bills have reached an agreement on a four-year, $48 million contract extension that includes $30 million guaranteed. Vikings receiver and punt returner Rondale Moore suffered a season-ending left knee injury in Saturday's preseason game against the Texans. And Jordan Love had surgery yesterday to repair a ligament injury in his left thumb. But the Packers expect the quarterback to be ready for their season opener. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Red Sox manager Alex Cora joins the afternoon crew, and that is next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
No matter where you work from these days,
take Jones and Keefe with you on the Odyssey app.
Favorite WEEI.
If you go out there and you lose to Jansen Junk, I'm officially peeing my pants, okay? If the Marlins come to Fenway and you don't win at least two of those games, really you should sweep them, but if you don't win at least two of these games, I am officially peeing my pants, okay? I will have wet pants. And I'm not proud of that. But that's where it's going to be.
Consider me Miles Davis.
Well, that was Arcan's analysis of where the Red Sox are at.
Kind of rooting for the Marlins now. You know, he hate to do it, but if the Marlins take two out of three, he's going to pee his pants on the air.
Have wet pants.
We're finally bringing back Wacky Radio.
Is that a brag?
What is?
No, it's not.
That's not a brag. That's a promise. Is what that is. That's a promise to you, the listener out there.
Yeah, we are.
He's doing everything he can.
He's bringing back Wacky Radio.
That is.
Yeah.
That's some hijinks.
Just lock yourself in a studio.
You're a stripper in next, Arcan? What's going on? That's a little much.
I didn't realize the night show,
as you and I both know, you're allowed to get away with a little bit more.
Oh, it's a safe harbor. Yeah.
Safe harbor, you can do whatever you want.
Do what you want.
Yeah. Your pants.
Yeah.
Whatever else.
No bosses are listening.
Nope.
You're good. I don't know how that changes with different day parts.
Okay.
But no one's listening.
So Arcan's put the Red Sox on notice a little bit.
Yeah. I'd say.
Let's go Marlins. Just take two. I don't want them to sweep or anything. Cause that's all he said, right? They have to win the series?
Correct. Yeah. You don't want the Marlins to do too much damage, but just enough to get Arcan to pee himself. Is officially our rooting interest this weekend.
So his next show after that would be during the Jimmy Fund, which I feel like he should not. Probably do that during that. He should probably wait until maybe Wednesday night.
Wait till after the telephone. Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah. You could even kind of drum it up.
Or you could have saved it. Be like, first person that donates $1,000, I'll pee my pants. And tie it into the bet you already lost.
That'd be good.
That was good. I like when Schlereth went on Pardon My Take and they just all peed their pants in front of him.
That was kind of bullying
the guest a little bit.
I peed my pants.
I don't know how I would react to that. That'd be tough.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, maybe save it for Wednesday. Good point. Not Monday or Tuesday during the Jimmy Fund.
But it starts tonight. A lot on the line this weekend series.
That wouldn't be tasteful. There is a lot on the line this weekend for the Red Sox. Hour two, Jones and Keefe will get to the Friday four-pack coming up at 11:30. Keep an eye on Jones and Keefe on Twitter and Instagram. I like how Terp prompted people about our top five lists.
Yeah, good job.
People are loving them.
Yeah, you can see them on the internet.
Our all-time podcast guests. But if you go seek those out, it seems like people are enjoying that very, very much.
Yep.
We'll do the Friday four-pack, Emergency Key for Madness, 11:45, and the Week in Review at 12:45. As for the Red Sox, Keith, they swept the Astros to start the month, and I kind of forgot about their August struggles. They're only 7-5 this month.
Mm-hmm.
If they do what Arcan is fearful seven. Is going to happen this weekend, they'll be right at 500 in the month of August. And so, or right around 500 in the month of August. Is it happening again? Is it another swoon after the trade deadline? It was masked by a sweep of the Astros.
Yeah.
But is it happening again for however many years in a row to Alex Cora and the Red Sox in August where they drop off?
Yeah, I choose to say no, this is not going to happen. You know, you gotta still look back. That Houston series was great. Kansas City, they at least win the series. San Diego and Houston, good teams, good pitchers, you know, pretty good lineups. Obviously disappointing stretch where, you know, in those series you go 2-4. Needs to be better, but I think it will be. I mean, Miami coming into town, they're not great, right? Like, they pitch pretty well. They got some guys that can rung up some strikeouts, so I would expect the over in some of these games. But they're a below 500 team. Red Sox are a really good home team. Like, that is one thing that stands out, right?
Almost a little too good.
Maybe too good. Maybe they can only win at home. They're like some of these, like, college football teams.
They're 39-22 at home. They're 27-34 on the road, and it's like, With all the accusations that have gone against the Red Sox, maybe they're just a little too good at Fenway Park.
So Miami, and then two with Baltimore over the next five. I mean, they should go 4-1 probably over this next five game stretch.
If they don't, you're making any bets or no? No? Any predictions?
I will pee on Arcan. No, I feel like right now you gotta look at them and say the trade deadline feels like it was more disappointing to us than it was the players, where in previous years, the deadline was very disappointing to the players. Cora got upset about it, and they went into a tank. This year, it feels like it's different, and maybe part of it is just having Roman Anthony and having Alex Bregman, having Garrett Crochet, and not just how good those players are, but maybe their attitudes and everything else, and just a true ace. And I know he didn't look like it his last time out, but I'll take my chances with him going forward, including on Sunday. Bregman, a guy who's made the playoffs every year of his career after his rookie year, is sort of used to these games mattering. And then somebody like Roman Anthony is just kind of riding this wave of his great rookie year. All those reasons, I think it is different from previous years. Doesn't mean I'm not looking at the standings and be like, oh man, Cleveland won again?
Yeah,
like, that's getting a little close for comfort.
It is just tightening up a little bit more than you'd like. Red Sox are a game back of Seattle, who in fairness has lost two in a row. They're a game and a half up on New York, who's dropped 6 out of 10. But right, the Guardians keep winning. Texas is looming back there. You'd like to see a little bit more of a gap. Let me give you a reason why I don't think it's happening again. I don't think they're as moody as they've been in years past. I think they showed more backbone already in the month of August than they have the last couple of years. But again, the record is what it is in the middle of the month. I saw this from Gordo. Play Tessie podcast on the Odyssey app. Check it out, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also listen on the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. Red Sox have 40 games remaining, Keith.
All right, we're down to it.
24 are against teams under 500. They have 6 with the Orioles, 6 with the A's, these 3 with the Marlins, 3 more with the Pirates, 3 with Tampa, 3 with Arizona.
Okay.
By record, that's the 7th easiest remaining schedule in baseball. The only teams... Thank you. The only teams they have, stand by, Joe. The only teams they have with winning records left, 3 with Toronto, 3 with Detroit, 3 with Cleveland, and
7
with the Yankees.
Wow.
So that's all they have
and
left.
They own the Yankees.
They have so far, yes.
So that's good news. And then that Cleveland series is going to be pretty good. You win a couple of games there, that might help knock them out or at least prevent them from moving up, who I still certainly don't believe in as like a real contender, but they're the next team back. And Cleveland is a half.
Oh, Cleveland, yeah.
Cleveland.
Yeah.
Cleveland. Nobody thinks Cleveland's a playoff team. Even Cleveland doesn't think they're a playoff team. But they're a half game behind the Yankees and therefore 2 games behind the Red Sox.
Well, let me go one step further than that. You got Cleveland at the beginning of September. You have a series coming up with New York next week, another series mid-September here at Fenway. The Toronto and Detroit series are the end of the year. And so I guess that could work against you if you're really playing for your lives to get into the postseason. But the hope would be, at that point, if you haven't quite locked up a playoff spot, there won't be much work to do when you go to Toronto, the second to last series. And then hopefully by the time Detroit's here to close it out, you're already comfortably in a spot. So there will be less emphasis on those series. Hopefully, if you're playing for your lives, then the schedule doesn't work out great.
Oh, I mean, if it was 1 or 2 wild card spots total, or if it was a deeper American League, you might be a little bit more leery about how things are going. But it is set up where I know it's only a 2-game lead right now, but I don't believe in Cleveland. And we'll see even what the Yankees are the rest of the way. Plus 7 games with the Red Sox, the way that's gone for them, they might be the ones on the outside. It might be Cleveland taking their spot.
It's true.
So Yeah, it's not like they're running away with this thing. It did seem like for a moment the division might be within reach. That feels less and less by the day. It's now 5 games back at Toronto.
Well, we're no longer asking about it every day in grab bags.
I should
tell you they've fallen out of it.
Yeah. But I mean, some of the numbers are still, they still have the best run differential in the American League. They still have scored more runs than anybody else in the American League. Like, those are all positive traits. And so you've played 75% of the season and you're in this spot, this final stretch. I think this weekend obviously is going to be pretty telling, not just, you know, the wins and losses, which is the most important, but Giolito tonight, then Bayo and Crochet. All three of those guys got hit around pretty good the last time out. I'm not expecting all three to be lights out, but you're hoping for two out of three of them at least go back to form.
And I'm specifically hoping for Crochet, because what I don't want, what I think happened in Houston, Crochet came out and looked dominant for his first two innings. But what I think happened is Houston was giving you retribution from what happened at Fenway earlier.
Yeah.
They were awfully locked in on Crochet. If you were watching that game, and I was admittedly in and out on that game.
Yeah,
but if you were watching that game, one thing you saw, it was wild, and I've never seen it. Dubon, like, crow-hopped up in the batter's box again. I think they knew what was coming from Crochet, and they were ready for him. However they got ready for him is how they got ready for him. And I'd say the same thing about the Red Sox. Some of these pitchers, I think the Astros did it to them. So I do hope you don't have a snowballing effect with Crochet where all of a sudden it's like, oh, man, it's a couple of bad starts in a row. Is it that he's thrown the most innings in his career? Is there fatigue? I'm not forecasting that. I don't believe that's going to be the case, but I'd like to see him nip that in the bud.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yo, definitely. And I think that goes a long way, too, because he was, when you're talking about Crochet, it was, he's the stopper during a losing streak, but he also extends winning streaks. And, like, you're almost expecting him to win every start, which is obviously unrealistic.
If
but
if he won his last start, he'd be the first 14-game winner in the bigs. I'm not sure anybody's gotten there since.
And, so, I mean, he's going to have to do it, but that's why he is a Cy Young finalist. And, like, he's going to be the guy to sort of put on their back. And we'll see how the offense does this weekend, too. Again, they're home. They got to pile up these home wins, and I don't care how they're doing it. But they've been pretty dominant, whereas on the road, they're still 7 games under .500 on the road. So, like, those ones you certainly can't take for granted once they get back out there.
Freddie Peralta, by the way, did get to a 14th win.
Okay.
But Milwaukee never loses.
They've won 12 straight.
Did you know that? Did you see this? They're in Milwaukee. They have a giveaway, Keith, where when the Brewers have a 12-game win streak, you get a free burger.
Oh, yeah. They just won burgers for everybody in the city, right?
You have to win 12 games to get it.
Well, they did.
But that's insanity.
Well, they did it.
But, like,
it's one of those ones where you hope it doesn't happen. Yeah. Remember, there used to be the ones like, if you hit the ball right here, literally right here,
yeah,
you hit a home run here, somebody wins a car.
Well, it's like,
wait, just that one spot? Like,
Jordan's eventually wisened up, right? Jordan's like, Red Sox win the World Series, free furniture. And it's
and
like,
then they did.
They started giving away free furniture left and right. They're like,
then they had to sweep the World Series.
Did that hit twice or just once?
Well, it might have hit the second time because they swept.
Yeah, I think it might have been twice. They definitely had to sweep one of them.
Then weren't they doing, like, no-hitter ones?
Hitters.
They're like, if there's a no-hitter before.
They might have done a cycle, too.
Yeah.
Cycle. Yeah, so, but it's, like, before June 30th or whatever.
No, they did have a caveat on, too. They're like, no-hitter on August 13th. It's like, they didn't even play August 13th. It's like, just buy the furniture.
Oh, no furniture for you then, I guess. You're just going to have to come in and ride the bomb ride. And
it's
so,
a good time. Which, kids love that place.
Will Fleming's favorite ride.
Yeah, it's good.
And so, when it comes to that's a wild. You have to win 12 straight to get a free burger.
They did it.
Lower than no.
Congrats
I'm saying,
to you guys.
Lower. How often does that ever come up in the history of Milwaukee baseball?
Hard
Can't
to say.
Be much.
What do you think it should be? Like 5 in a row?
Something like that.
Sweep a series. Get yourself a burger. That's too much. That's too easy.
Yeah, more than that.
4 games. 5.
5.
5 game winning streak.
Five
get
win,
a
get
burger.
Yourself a free burger.
Hamburger. No cheese.
Celtics are giving. Say, well, you got to pay for that.
Pay for extra, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics give away, like, free nuggets every time the opposing team misses a free throw.
I love that.
So, like,
when players sometimes miss on purpose, and then they, like, look at the crowd.
Don't ask Isaiah Thomas about that. Wasn't that guy yelling, like, racist things at Isaiah Thomas because the guy wanted a Frosty?
Oh, my God. Well, I don't remember that.
I didn't realize that.
Yikes.
But I'm saying there's a lower bar on some of these giveaways.
That's true.
They're not all Jordans with a no-hitter.
I'm sorry. I just wanted a Frosty.
Jeez. I didn't know that. My gosh.
What was it in semi-pro? What happened, Bill? Did the guy hit the half-court shot?
No. Oh, so there was the full-court shot for $10,000.
Yeah.
But there was the, if they score over 125 points, everybody gets a corn dog.
That's right. And then he was like trying to block guys' shots on his own team, and then they finally score. He's like, corn dogs! Corn dogs, Jackie, for all these people.
nice. 617-779-7937. Any concerns about Cora and the job he's doing? Just we've talked about the month of August. They have leveled off here in the last few games. They dropped 4 out of 5, I think, recently coming into this. So are there any concerns about Cora beyond just the month of August, but just the way things are heading? The ejection the other night,
yeah,
hung up on the balk, all that weirdness that happened in the final game in Houston.
Well, I do think he was kind of trending down a little bit because he had turned things around. He was having a bad first half of the season. So yeah, even though you had him
on the hot seat. Did you fire him? I had him fired.
I didn't fire him yet, but it was like, where were you going to be at in the standings come All-Star break and then trade deadline? And like around there, you had to at least kind of consider it and completely pulled him out of it, like completely turned the thing around. But over the last week, this 2-5 stretch, there's been a handful of times where you're like, is that the right call? Like, oh, you're leaving him in, or you're doing this, or oh, you're throwing a bunt down, or you're not. Like there's been a few more questionable decisions with Cora. I would say over the last 30 games, overall it's been good. The last 7, maybe less so. So, yeah, I have some concerns. He was not having a good season. I think normally pretty good manager, but, yeah, this wasn't a banner year for him. You know, I don't think he's going to hold this one up and be like, see, I was doing a good job managing, even though the team has a better record than it did the previous year. They also have more talent.
Do you think if they somehow miss the playoffs, which, again, we're not forecasting, do you think he's in any jeopardy here in Boston, or do you think he's safe?
I think
the way it's gone, he feels pretty safe all of a sudden.
I think so, too, but then again, like, what are we talking about? Like, if you lose to the Guardians getting the playoffs over you?
Yeah, something like that.
You got to probably consider it. Like, the wheels have to really fall off.
No,
the team is healthy,
I would consider it. Do you think John Henry would do it?
So, I do think they like Breslow more than him, which I never thought I would have said. I always would have assumed they like Cora more. They've stuck by Cora so much. But I think they love Breslow because he got rid of Devers.
Yep.
And they love Breslow because he's fielding kind of a winning team without spending a ton of money.
Outside of the trade deadline, pretty good GM.
Yeah, right. They locked up some extensions.
Oh, you agree with that?
So,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Well,
the
deadline's important.
No, I didn't.
Because
yeah.
The deadline's important. That's what got Chaim Bloom fired. He had some decent signings, but at the trade deadline, he panicked. He didn't know what to do. I think it depends on what it looks like. Is there a lot of games where Cora, what if Cora like goes against the analytics and is like, oh, I got a gut feel and they lose, right? Like, I think it can look differently.
I can tell you, he went against the Jones analytics the other day by sticking with Walker Buehler longer than he had to. Those are pretty simple analytics. Get trash Walker Buehler out of
true. Them. Like, yeah. Maybe don't even start him.
Yeah.
Like, start there.
Yeah.
Put somebody else in instead of him. But if they miss the playoffs, it'll be deemed a collapse because we are in the middle of August and you're in a playoff spot. So if you collapse, you're at least on the radar. You should be. Now, I don't know where they would turn and all that other stuff, but, yeah, they should consider it, right? Because, like, a year or two ago, you'd be like, they'll just can the chief baseball officer, they'll blame him for it, they'll scapegoat him, and they'll keep the manager. Now I'm not so sure. They like Breslow so much, maybe they'd say, all right, you can pick your manager.
Yeah, and I think Breslow, even trade deadline included, has had a better year than Cora to this point. I don't really see Henry moving on from him, but if they miss the playoffs and they collapse, maybe.
Here's one thing, though. Don't you think keeping Cora also helps you keep Bregman? If you fire Cora, I could see Bregman more open to free agency.
Maybe. I think Bregman would probably stay either way, but it helps for sure. I think it's a fair point. 617-779-7937. You guys can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. It's a Friday. We got an emergency key for madness for you at 11:45, so stay tuned. That comes your way less than a half hour from now. We have Week in Review next hour at 12:45, and on the way next, right after Trending with Billy Lanny, let's get to a four-pack of questions in the Friday four-pack.
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending is brought to you by the 99 Restaurants. Tonight, the Red Sox return to action to begin a 5-game homestand with the first of 3 games against the Marlins. You can hear the call of the game with Will Fleming and Sean McDonough right here on 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Stone Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. Lucas Giolito will get the start in the series opener against the Marlins' Sandy Alcantara. Don't forget to tune into the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show with Christian Arcand beginning at 6:10. Braintree Little League was shut out 13-0 by South Carolina in the opening round of the Little League World Series yesterday. Braintree will now play Texas in an elimination game tomorrow. First pitch is scheduled for 2 p.m. It's a walkthrough day today for the New England Patriots ahead of tomorrow afternoon's preseason game against the Vikings in Minnesota. Kickoff is at 1 o'clock. The Celtics' regular season schedule has officially been released. The Seas will open the season at home against the Philadelphia 76ers on Wednesday, October 22nd. The Seas will have 25 nationally televised games this season. And the Revolution return to action tomorrow night. The Revs host Los Angeles FC. Kickoff from Gillette Stadium is at 7:30. It's colossal lobster roll season at the 99. Choose hot buttered or traditional, built to the hilt with chunks of North Atlantic lobster, served with fries and coleslaw. You gotta love the nines. I'm Billy Lanny. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.